with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, and welcome to this Wednesday night program. Yeah, Wednesday night. Most of the way to Friday. Downhill to the weekend. Hump day. Tax day. But you know, brothers and sisters, you know. It is so much more than that. It's all of those things and more. It is, in fact, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Hallelujah, brethren and sistren. Come on down, choir master. Fire up the band.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen. Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Talking about.
Jesus.
I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord. Do you know His name?
Hallelujah.
Have you seen His glory? Have you felt the warming comfort of His precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise His holy name. Praise His blessed spirit. Praise His everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord.
Hallelujah, brethren and sistren. Come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through your body. This is Prayer Meeting Night. I am Brother Bob Kincaid, Archbishop in this Cathedral of Common Sense. Ha! Yes! And we have a story to start the evening. This Carolyn Kennedy business. You know, I'm used to the problem being fundamentalist, phony, right-wing Protestantism, with an occasional side order of lunatic, hardcore orthodoxy or Roman Catholicism. But no, his holiness is smack dab in the middle of our lead prayer meeting story this evening. Caroline Kennedy is 53 years old. You know, full-grown adult and all that stuff. You would think that, come on, she's a Kennedy. How much more Catholic can you get? Her daddy had to come down here to the hills of Appalachia and convince up folks up hollers that he was going to do America's bidding and not sit and take orders from the Pope so as he could get to be president. And, you know, we listened to him in Appalachia, and we said, okay. And John Kennedy carried West Virginia. It was a historic moment for the nation, and it is still a profound moment for West Virginia. Folks up hollers and various and sundry places around the state decided to vote for John Kennedy instead of Dick Nixon, before he dicks you, and changed the course of America. Yes, indeed. Of course, they couldn't do the same thing for a man with dark skin a few months ago, but, you know, how far do you want us to go? I mean, really, please. Then again, our forebears might have been a darn sight smarter than we are. But at any rate, Carolyn Kennedy was very forthright in her support of Barack Obama's presidential ambitions. Supported his campaign from the get-go. And, of course, when you do that and you're high profile, you get rewarded. Right? I mean, that's kind of how it works, right? Well, after the whole messy flap about her wanting to be appointed to Hillary Clinton's vacated seat, that just got all ugly. And so it has been spoken of that perhaps the appropriate thing might be to appoint her as ambassador to the Vatican. And the Pope at Rome said no, or is saying no. And I'm incensed at this. It may be argued that as Roman Catholicism in the United States goes, the Kennedy family are literally the face of what it means to be Roman Catholic in America. Spitting on the memory of her father, spitting on the memory of her uncle, spitting on the memory of her brother, a man who has provided cover to child molesters says that Caroline Kennedy isn't fit to be the United States ambassador to the Vatican because she holds a personal belief that women's insides are women's business. Imagine the nerve of her. I wish I was kidding. I honest to goodness do, but I'm not. It's not official. The appointment hasn't been made. But apparently, from the news reports that I've seen, the Pope at Rome, through his official spokespeople, has let it be known that she would not be recognized. The nerve of that son of a bitch. The nerve of that dirty old bastard. The nerve of that man who fought on behalf of the Third Reich, declaring what anyone's morality is or should be. Well, you know, there was an article a couple of weeks back saying that Benedict the 16th's papacy has been a real disaster. I get the idea that in and around the Vatican, Benedict the 16th is sort of like the Vatican's answer to George W. Bush. Constantly sticking his foot in his mouth, hasn't quite gotten around to saying that he wants to put food on anybody's family or asking anybody to help him pluck onions. But is a genuine embarrassment to people of real faith who follow who follow Roman Catholicism and adhere to its tenets, but dare to disagree with that old freak, where things like condoms, birth control, and women's reproductive choice are concerned. Forgive me, but this story really, really gets my hackles up. Since when do we let's look at it this way, and maybe this is what we ought to be doing. Maybe the ambassador, maybe we ought to drag countries kicking and screaming into the 21st century with our ambassadorial appointments. You know what I'm getting at? For instance, maybe our ambassador, and maybe she is, maybe, and I don't know. All those nations that despise women for being women, maybe our ambassadors to them should be women. Maybe we need a female ambassador to Afghanistan. Maybe we need a female ambassador to Saudi Arabia. Maybe that should be policy. And you know what? If the Vatican does not want diplomatic relations with the United States, insofar as they're a religious state in the first place, maybe we don't need diplomatic relations with them, and we need to kick their papal nuncio out of Washington. That's not utopian. That's actually realist. That's reality-based thinking. And you can't have reality-based thinking in a political world, because everything has to be calculated for maximum positive political effect. Republicans do it. Democrats do it. Libertarians do it. Anarcho-syndicalists do it. Green people do it. Everyone who is involved in politics calculates the political effect of a decision. The Massachusetts Catholic Action League, and according to the article that I am looking at, sources within the Vatican itself, according to this article at the Women on the Web, are making it known that they want nothing to do with Caroline Kennedy because she has wrong thoughts about vaginas and what happens in uteri. Isn't that a little bothersome? Uterus? Uterus is a Latin word of the masculine gender, but it's something that only happens in a female. What? So more than one uterus would be uteri, I think. Vatican sources, according to a story at the Telegraph of the UK, which I realize is suspect. Vatican sources told an Italian newspaper called Il Giornale, the journal, that support for abortion disqualifies Ms. Kennedy or any other Roman Catholic that President Obama would seek to appoint. The Vatican strongly approves, disapproves of President Obama's support for abortion and stem cell research. That's right. That's right. Never mind the suffering millions in the world. The twisted psychopaths at the Vatican think that recently fertilized eggs that aren't ever going to be babies are more important than the suffering humanity. You know, because see, I mean, I've been through Matthew, Mark, Luke, you know, the usual suspects several times, and I have yet to read of a miracle where Jesus healed a fetus. The G8 summit is coming up in Italy in July, at which time President Obama is scheduled to meet with the old Nazi anti-aircraft gunner. And this could really sour that meeting. Raymond Flynn, according to this UK article from the Telegraph, is a former U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, and he said that Ms. Kennedy would be a poor choice. It's imperative. It's essential that the person who represents us to the Holy See be a person who has pro-life values. I hope the president doesn't make that mistake. She said she was pro-choice. I don't assume she's going to change that, which is problematic.
I get the idea that Raymond Flynn, probably not the Clinton, the Clinton appointee to the Holy See. God, this pisses me off.
And, you know, I'm sorry. I have no problem. I have no problem whatsoever delivering an ultimatum to the Vatican. To wit, you will recognize our appointee to the Holy See, ambassadorship to the Holy See. You will recognize our appointment, or just get the hell out of Washington. If you do not wish diplomatic relations with the United States, far be it from us to force them upon you. I have no... It is not an earth-shattering position. It is largely ceremonial. It is an honor. I guess it's a real plum to Roman Catholics. Me, I would rather be the ambassador to a little Caribbean island nation, preferably involving the island of St. Lucia. Beautiful place, that, I'm told. Hell, I'd rather be the ambassador to Belize. I'd rather be the ambassador to Cambodia than be the ambassador to the Vatican. And just see, the Vatican holds no majesty or mystery for me.
I'd rather, and given the choice, I'd rather be the ambassador to Italy than the ambassador to the Vatican. Because once again, it's strictly ceremonial. Of course, I was in D.C. My wife and I were in D.C. a couple of weeks ago. It turned out we wound up being in the heart of embassy country. Didn't realize it, but we were rock-throwing distance from the Chinese embassy. And Lord knows what kinds of espionage were taking place all around us. The really scary-looking embassy that said no stopping, standing, or staring, that was the Portuguese embassy. I never knew that they were so testy. But the French embassy was beautiful. It was right next to the Portuguese embassy. I think I saw the Mexican embassy somewhere. Just lots of embassies. Walking back one evening, we walked past the Maltese embassy. And I looked at my wife and I said, you know, if it was up to me, I would insist that there be a sculpture of a bird of prey at the top of the building. She said, what? I said, yeah. So people could walk by and go, there's the Maltese falcon. Yeah, I got about as much laughter there as I'm getting here. But this is obnoxious behavior. Genuinely obnoxious behavior. Again, it's a ceremonial post. Caroline Kennedy is not going to go in there and say, now see here, you old transvestite, you, we got to talk about women's reproductive rights. She's not going to do that. She'll bow and scrape and kiss the ring and do all that all that self-abasing business and be thrilled to pieces just to meet that old Nazi anti-aircraft gunner. You know, the fact that it means nothing to me or less than nothing doesn't mean that she feels the same way. But for all those right-wingers out there that had such a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy about Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, bending at the waist to do a two-handed handshake with the King of Saudi Arabia and feeling that he had defiled our sovereignty, I bowed and scraped to the King of Saudi Arabia. Yeah, he didn't give him a big old kiss on the mouth and walk through the bluebells with him like Dear Leader did. No, for all the right-wingers who felt that way, I haven't seen much outrage from them about the Vatican telling us who could be our ambassador. And in fact, it's been almost across the board crickets. And, of course, why not? You know, they're hypocrites. Who's surprised? Not only are they hypocrites, they're idiots, the right-wingers. And by idiot, I don't mean textbook definition. I mean too stupid to be able to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel definition. What do I mean? Well, case in point, Flush Flimball. Oh, I know you're tired of hearing about Flush, but you know what? We're going to do it anyway. You know, last night, and you know, we'll probably have some passing reference to the teabagging business. I did not go today. I didn't. The weather was looking dodgy, and what little bit of decent equipment we have, I'm not going to run the risk of taking out in the rain and getting ruined. It just won't do it, especially not for a bunch of damn right-wingers. So my apologies. But you know the right wing went into full-on, no doubt about it, purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy mode about the report on right-wing extremism in the United States. It had developed some yesterday, but it had not reached full-on hissy mode. Well, we got to hissy mode today. Right-wing hissy mode. You've got Joe Scarborough. Here, just, you know, for example.
When you have a president and you have the Department of Homeland Security more focused on targeting veterans than on protecting our border in the South, where a war is breaking out, are protecting us from, I don't know, Al-Qaeda? Isn't this interesting? They no longer want to use the term war on terror.
Right.
They don't want to use the war on terror because that makes them feel uncomfortable. But they've got no problem targeting veterans, returning from war. This is perverse.
Targeting veterans? Wait, I thought it was the Bush administration that was putting veterans in rooms that were rat and bug infested. And oh, wait a minute. He's talking about that reference to veterans coming home to a tough economy and possibly being radicalized by right-wing extremists or having right-wing extremist leanings already. Yeah, to Joe Scarborough, Obama is more focused on targeting veterans by worrying about right-wing extremism. So, you know, that's one of those hissies. There were, of course, more hissies. There were hissies from Lou Dobbs, hissies all over the, 'cause hissies are what they do best. The only problem, well, you'll find out. This is too precious. These people, these right wingers are so lost in their own rage, their own blind, just haymaker swinging, nothing connecting rage, that they can't even sort of take time enough to figure out that maybe they're wrong. Witness the notorious anti-immigrant screamer Lou Dobbs.
The Department of Homeland Security tonight warning of a new terrorist threat facing America. The threat comes from what it calls right-wing extremists in this country. The report says people who are opposed to restricting Second Amendment rights to bear arms or who are concerned about illegal immigration and border security could well fall under the Department of Homeland Security definition of an extremist. Gina Zerb has our report.
Political conservatives are fired up.
This is an effort to criminalize political dissent, standard, ordinary, everyday political dissent.
This fury, a reaction to an assessment from the Department of Homeland Security saying right-wing extremist groups could exploit fears about the economic downturn, gun control, and the election of an African-American president to attract new recruits. It says groups dedicated to a single issue, such as opposition to abortion or immigration, may fall within the definition of extremist.
We are not extremists. They are the extremists.
To make its case, DHS cites a surge in purchases of guns and ammunition, and the recent shooting of three Pittsburgh police officers by a man reportedly influenced by racist ideology and fears of gun confiscations. An organization that tracks extremist groups thinks DHS has the picture at least partially right.
Okay. So you know how, you know what's going on there. Flimball screaming. Dobbs pontificating. You know where this goes. You know where this goes. Earlier today, on Flimball's program, the following.
The foundation, he wants to redo the foundation. I guarantee if he succeeds in this, the dream of our founders will have been killed. It will not live on. And that is the precise point. The foundation, that's what Obama called his soothing talk about gutting and remaking the American economy, built on free markets, built on capitalism. President Obama gently explained how the business model was flawed, that Milton Friedman was a kook, that the great, well, okay, he was, but that the greatest economy in history was built on quicksand, and knowing that nothing of permanence could be built on quicksand, hey, bring me that Dominican boy in a Viagra. Obama proposed building a new foundation for our economy, one built on a rock. What rock? Marxism? What mark? What rock? Socialism? Hard to say. All we get is the dreamy, silky speeches. Yeah. But that's not all. That's not all. There was this parody with Flimbaugh today.
Now, an urgent Homeland Security update for the youth of America from President Barack Obama.
Boys and girls, your family members could be right-wing extremists. Your mom, your dad, even your brothers or sisters. Does your daddy get angry when he sees his tax bill? Does your mom listen to that Rush Limbaugh from noon to three? Do they tune into Fox News? Do they shop at Walmart? Do they force you to ride in a car that gets less than 30 miles to the gallon or makes you go to church? If they do, you don't have to grow up terrified by right-wingers. Now you can do something about it. Join the Obama Youth Movement. Be the first in your neighborhood to turn in your mom, your dad, your little sister, and proudly wear a brown shirt. So be on the lookout for any subversive activity and remember the watchword, Heil Hope.
This message provided by Obama's teleprompter, routed through the word processor of Janet Napolitano, who signed it before she read it.
Mother McCree. Heil Hope? Heil Hope? Yeah, Heil Hope. There's only one problem. And it really is kind of a big problem. It's a great big problem. It's a huge, it's a huge problem where facts are concerned. This problem. That report on right-wing extremism? Do you know the one that Flimbaugh was, and Dobbs and every right-winger under the sun having a hissy about? The report on, I don't know how to break it to them. I mean, this is tough. But that report on right-wing extremism was commissioned and researched. Oh, dear, this is going to be hard for them to swallow. By the Bush administration! Now, granted, they churned one out on left-wing extremism that they got ready a whole lot faster. Because you never know when those PETA protesters outside the Heavenly Ham are going to turn violent. And I don't know, go and, you know, poor little things don't eat meat. They got such brittle little bones. It's so skinny. I don't know if they could turn over a mailbox if they got all worked up. I mean, it does me no good. Well, yes, it does. I won't lie to you. I think this is funnier than hell. The right-wing extremism report was commissioned and completed in large part by functionaries of the Bush administration. Oh, dear. Rush, put down that little Dominican boy for a minute and tell me, is that egg on your face?
Or was he just happy to see you? Yeah, I know. It's kind of hard to swallow it. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. But really, it was compiled by the Bush administration. And in an even more embarrassing moment, after having had people screaming about it all over Fox, a Fox reporter went on the air and said, and by the way, her name is Catherine Herridge. She said, "Well, this is an element of the story which has largely gone unreported." No, at Fox, really? One looks at right-wing groups, as you mentioned, and a second is on left-wing groups. Significantly, both were requested by the Bush administration, but not finished until President Bush left office. Yeah, that's Catherine Herridge on Fox News. But that doesn't really slow them down. Remember, this is a news channel whose hero is Ronald Reagan, who said, remember, "Well, facts are stupid things." So consequently, you get, you get all this put together by the folks over at Think Progress, which is well worth the effort. They do great work.
Speak out, get shut down. What some say the government is doing right now to silence its critics.
A new report from Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano warns law enforcement officials of right-wing extremists recruiting U.S. veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan to, get this, take advantage of their military training.
Well, obviously, people are upset about that. And Dana Perino, some of the right are saying clearly this is a hit job on conservatives.
To say that people that are pro-life and that are concerned about our border
seems a
are
bit
radical
misguided.
And shouldn't be able to express themselves in peaceful ways, that seems a little extreme.
Our question.
Only one problem there, Dana Perino. It didn't say any of that. Not even a little bit. Not even if you looked really, really hard. He didn't say that people shouldn't be able to express themselves. And, of course, Dana Perineal, you worked for the guy who commissioned the report. So is that, and of course, you're a good right-winger, which means that you are an uber-Christian. Does that mean you're committing a sin of omission or a sin of commission in not straightening out Steve Doocy? So the Fox News poll question.
Question is, conservative crackdown, is this a coincidence? What do you think of the timing of this thing? Friends at FoxNews.com.
It's free speech, and the Obama administration is trying to shut it down because, as I pointed out before, they don't like any kind of disagreement or dissent when it's against their policies.
Well,
okay, that is Andrea Tantaros. Is it coincidence? Is this just the universe working its little irony gig that Tantaros isn't too far from tantrum? I don't know.
The Obama administration here under Department of Homeland Security has allowed a new regime to come into place that basically says this: our focus is going to be on the right-wing groups, the pro-lifers, those that are opposed to various immigration policies. So they're
Only one problem. The report doesn't say that. Again, not even a little bit.
Using this report to stifle speech.
And nobody's used any report to stifle anything. It came out yesterday, for the love of God. Oh, but when you really, really want the whipped cream on poop, you gotta turn to Sean Hannity and none other than doctor, bearing in mind that he's the kind of doctor that can't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody, Dr. James Dobson.
I'm thinking, what do you think of that interpretation, especially coming from a guy that started his political career in the home of an unrepentant terrorist who bombed our Pentagon and Capitol and sat in...
Holy mackerel! They're going to have to truck in the paper towels to get the egg off of Sean Hannity's face. Oh, but wait, he's not going to tell his little wingnut, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers that this was commissioned by the Bush administration. No. But no, it started his political career in the home of a known terrorist. Well, you know, but then again, Sean, your boy George, dim leader, started his business career with the help of the family of a known terrorist. That would be the Bin Ladens. But who the hell am I, huh?
Reverend Wright's church for 20 years.
Apparently this was mailed out on the 7th of April, which was a week ago.
Yep.
Now you take a look at what's happening across the country today. People are gathering in public places to protest big government.
Sure.
Without making a
single
firm
issue.
Link to it, do you, I mean, is it possible?
Sure.
There's a connection.
Listen,
this report
absolutely.
Comes out a week before it happens?
If Bush had done that, we would be having a very different conversation.
If Bush did do that, and you're not having a different conversation, you bubble-headed bleach blonde! Ah!
Taken a week to find
it
out. There would have been a special prosecutor. We would have had to come out and apologize. This is interesting.
That was Dana Perineal again, by the way. When did they ever come out and apologize for anything? Just ask him.
Interesting, because they look at right-wing groups, and we're curious whether they look at left-wing groups as well.
Well, this is an element of the story which has largely gone unreported. There are two assessments. One looks at right-wing groups, as you mentioned, and the second focuses on left-wing groups significantly. Both were requested by the Bush administration, but not finished until President Bush left office.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. But don't worry. Nobody was out there telling the teabaggers today. Oh, let's see. The left-wing extremists are sitting around trying to tune up their guitars so they can all play Kumbaya in the same damn key. And the right-wing extremists are stockpiling guns and ammo. You tell me. Teabaggers. Any teabaggers out in the audience? The ones who went to the tea parties today? You tell me. Who's more dangerous, the people who are stockpiling ammo or the people who are trying to tune their guitars? Or ukuleles? Or banjos? Or mandolins? Or you get the idea. And then, just to cap it all off, this. Joseph Samuel Wurzel Backer Booker Weasel Bagger whatever, Joe the Not a Plumber, of course, couldn't miss out on a gig like the teabagging. No. No, you just can't. Not if you're Joe the Not a Plumber. So he goes out into the field today.
Roger L. Simon is promoting the Tea Parties on his conservative website, Pajamas TV, where you can watch Sam Wurzelbacher, a.k.a. Joe the Plumber, interview protesters at the rallies. As Wurzelbacher found, some of the rhetoric can be extreme.
If you could waterboard Obama this weekend, what would you try to get out of him? What would you ask
him? Well, I don't want to waterboard Obama. I don't approve of that. I would like to hope, and I think, that the majority of the people here are respectful.
If you could waterboard Obama this weekend, what would you try to get out of him? What would you ask him? And Joe Weaselbooger says, well, I don't want to waterboard Obama. And you know what's going on inside his mind, and I won't even repeat that. If you could waterboard Obama this weekend, what would you try to get out of him? Again, it's not really rhetorical. Use the phone, you know how. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Not a rhetorical question. What does the right wing want? What do they want to happen to this country? They object to the bailouts. They sort of object to bailing out the banks, but they were nowhere to be seen when the bailouts were first coming down the pike. You know, under George Bush, the guy who commissioned the right-wing extremism study that didn't get finished until after the left-wing extremism study. I suspect because it was so damned hard to find any left-wing extremists, but yeah, who am I? What do they want? Can we, this evening, paint a sort of audio picture of the America that the right wing wants? I'll start. It's an America where the working class conveniently dies off. It is an America where wages are damn near poverty level. It is an America that does not only does not cherish its elderly, but does not want anyone to get to be elderly. It is an America where those with born or with congenital later developed disabilities are of no value to the state and therefore can go and that's the world they want. Add what you think. Add what you think. In the mailbox right now regarding the Vatican and Caroline Kennedy. Bob, I'm a recovering Catholic, a product of 12 years of Catholic school before college. Benny the Rat is determined to drag us back to the 15th century. Considering the last two popes have not been Italians, maybe we need to put in another Italian like John the 23rd in to control. He was a man of God. I am embarrassed by the Roman Catholic Church. That's our buddy Maura, who also notes that, she says, I forgot to tell you, at his investiture ceremony this afternoon, New York just installed new Archbishop Dolan. Dolan gave a homily on the sanctity of life, the importance of family, and that he will stand up against gay marriage. Quite a start right out of the gate. Needless to say, he and Benny the Rat are buds.
It's black stagging, not pole frazzle lacking.
God just hates that majestic holy graciousness. That's a line from Yosemite Sam. And, of course, that speech has to happen at the investiture ceremony because the governor of New York has recently announced that he will introduce gay marriage. He will introduce legislation enacting into law fundamental principles of constitutional equal protection. There we go. Yeah. News Ninja Susan says, what the right wing wants? They want The Handmaid's Tale. Yeah. For those of you who have read it, it's a very dim and dark vision, to say the very least. They want maybe Fahrenheit 451 world, where we're all mesmerized by full-screen televisions that take up all four walls of the room, and the firemen burn books instead of putting out fires. Maybe that's what they want. They want a world choked in coal smoke. Maybe that's what they want. It beggars the imagination, doesn't it? It is simply a horror. And toward that end, speaking of which, A commercial. A commercial. The name of the commercial is Percussion.
In America, there's an energy you can feel. Energy created by American workers and American jobs. Jobs that will get our economy back on its feet and make us more competitive. Jobs powered by affordable energy, generated by our most abundant fuel, coal, the source of half of our electricity. It is America's power.
You'll notice now that they're on the run, they've taken out the clean part. Now they're just hustling coal. How do you think a Massey worker who has had his pay cut, the ones who are still working, or a Massey worker who has been laid off for the foreseeable future, how do you think they feel when they see an ad like that? If that's what's going to get America working again, then why did I just get laid off? I don't know. And this line from the blog post underneath the video. It's a fact that energy costs are second only to labor costs when it comes to determining the success of a business in a given location, and coal-based electricity provides the affordable energy we need to create American jobs and get the economy back on track. I don't think that's true. Energy costs are second only to labor costs? See, that's another right-wing talking point, that labor is the most expensive part of, a construction project. It's not true. It is absolutely not true. But why should something like the truth borrow? Why should the truth bother a crowd like that? So that's kind of the tenor of what we've got going for this evening. Plenty of room on the phone lines if you want to chime in. Stack them up. Let's have some conversation tonight. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, and we got to, it ain't a prayer meeting without a congregation. We'll take a little break as we head toward the top of the hour. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. And we'll be back shortly.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. American Airlines workers aren't standing for bonuses being paid to top executives while they face potential wage and benefit cuts. Jesse Russell reports.
Ground workers for American Airlines are in the process of negotiating a new contract with the airline, seeking restoration of concessions they made in 2003 to help the company stay afloat. On Tuesday, hundreds of workers from all over the country gathered at the company's headquarters in Fort Worth, Texas, to protest bonuses that will be paid to managers and top executives this week. The union is protesting the bonuses, which will be paid out to roughly 1,000 executives and managers today, because the airline is losing money and worker wages have still not been restored, since they took an average pay cut of 26%. Thanks to the concessions by those workers, the airline was able to avoid bankruptcy.
The largest U.S. aluminum producer is threatening to cut production at a Quebec smelter if workers don't take a pay cut. Alcoa is in negotiations with workers and is seeking concessions so it can reduce payroll by 15%. The United Steelworkers says the company is already planning to slash jobs in violation of its labor agreement. President Barack Obama is more popular than capitalism. According to a Rasmussen Reports national poll, just 53% of Americans favor capitalism over socialism. President Obama, on the other hand, has an average 62% approval rating, according to polls. After watching capitalism melt down with the near collapse of banks, the stock market, and the housing market, young adults under 30 are nearly evenly split between capitalism and socialism. The Rasmussen poll says 37% of Americans under 30 favor capitalism, with 33% saying socialism is better, and the rest are undecided. The AFL-CIO and its community affiliate, Working America, have launched UnemploymentLifeline.com. It's a resource for workers who have lost jobs to help people stay afloat when they need it the most. The site is designed to help workers find information they need to access all the resources they need to weather the economic storm. The AFL-CIO and the Change to End Labor Federation will unite in support of immigration reform, calling for legalizing immigrants already in the U.S. Both labor groups will also oppose any large new program to bring in more immigrant workers. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney told the New York Times that labor will speak with one voice on immigration reform.
Here is today's economic report. As the recession continues, U.S. workers are losing faith in the prospect of a comfortable retirement. A new study from the Employee Benefit Research Institute found that only 13% of workers believe they will have enough saved for retirement. The report cited an increase in health care costs, the devaluation of many retirement plans, and poor planning. 44% of those polled have guessed how much they will need to retire instead of actually calculating retirement needs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Slow night out there. You guys aren't feeling very chatty tonight. But that's okay. I'm loaded for bear for this prayer meeting edition. Oh, where to go, where to go, where to go. Well, let's just finish up the teabagger foolishness. Get done with them. And by the way, this is, of course, tax day as well, as I mentioned at the top of the program. And when, where, and how did we lose sight of the fact that getting what we want government to do done doesn't happen for free? I'm often skeptical of the sort of DLC style Democrat that Paul Begala is, but I really appreciate what he said today in a commentary over at CNN, and I respect it. He said, "Happy Patriots Day. April 15th is the one day a year when our country asks something of us, or at least the vast majority of us. For those who wear a military uniform, those who serve the rest of us as policemen and firefighters and teachers and other public servants, every day is Patriots Day. They work hard for our country. Many risk their lives, and some lose their lives. But for the rest of us, the civilian majority, our government asks very little, except for April 15th. On this day, our government asks that we pay our fair share of taxes to keep our beloved country strong and safe. Freedom isn't free. That's what the courageous World War II veterans of the American Legion taught me back in Texas Boys State decades ago. That phrase had special meaning for them. Those guys had seen buddies blown apart at Anzio or Guadalcanal or 100 other places. Begala says, "I grew up in a different era. There was no draft, and while I have friends and family members who joined the military, most of my peers, like me, opted for the security and prosperity of the private sector. This country," he says, "has showered me with the blessings of liberty. So what do I owe my country in return? Paying my fair share of taxes, it seems, is the least I can do. Thanks to President Obama and the Democratic Congress, 95% of Americans will get a tax cut this year. No one, not even the wealthiest 1%, will have to pay higher income taxes until 2011. And I would even go so far as to put an addendum on what Paul Begala said. And that is that the tax rates that go back up for the wealthiest 1% of the country are going to go back up to roughly the same percentage as they were during the heyday of St. Ronnie of Reagan. See, that's the problem with being a wingnut. You can't square up all of your hatred with reality. You would think to hear these teabaggers talk that President Obama, by the way, there were T-shirts at various and sundry teabagging parties today that featured a likeness of President Obama with a little cap with the red star on it, calling him Barack Mao Obama. Yeah, really. On top of statements like, if you could waterboard Barack Obama, what would you do? Do you see what they want? Do you see where they're going? Do you see what they're dreaming of? So it's not like taxes are actually going back up. Taxes will get normal for the richest 1% of America. Oh, sometime in a couple of years or so. But Begala asks, so why are a bunch of Fox News clowns and right-wing cranks hosting tea parties all over the country? the Boston Tea Party in case the clods at Fox News. Clods. I haven't used clods lately. I got to get clods back into my vocabulary. That's a good one. The Boston Tea Party, in case the clods at Fox didn't know it, protested taxation without representation. Note the second word, without. The goofballs tossing tea bags today have representation. They voted in the election. They lost. As John Stewart noted a week or so ago, I think they are confusing revolution with losing, or some such. They did lose. And by the way, the teabaggers had a big, ridded truck full of teabags that first they hoped to dump into the Potomac River. God, morons. But found out that that's illegal because you can't dump stuff in streams unless you're a coal company. So then they got back in their truck and they trundled it down to the National Mall, where they hoped to dump their big truckload of tea bags on the National Mall, but couldn't, because they didn't bother to get a permit. Yeah, these law and order right-wing types turned out a bunch of scofflaws who couldn't be bothered to get a simple permit. But anyway, so that a bunch of overpaid media millionaires would lead a faux populist revolt is comical. They somehow held their populist instincts in check as George W. Bush and the Republicans cut taxes on the idle rich and put the screws to the working stiffs. Bush's tax policies were a godsend to the Paris Hilton class, but they sent the country on the road to bankruptcy and help ruin the economy. But now that we the people have decided to set things right, now that we've hired Obama to fix the mess conservatives created, now they're protesting? Yeah, now they're protesting, Paul. Give me a break, he says. Instead of tossing tea bags for the cameras, the Fox phonies ought to go to Walter Reed Army Medical Center. There they would find better, braver men who have truly sacrificed for their country, I'll add, and women. They deserve nothing but the best, not the shameful and shoddy conditions they endured during the Bush administration. You want something to protest? How about protesting how little we give back to our veterans? How about protesting that the entire budget of the National Cancer Institute, where government researchers battle a disease that will strike half of all men and a third of all women, is 0.03% of what we gave the bandits at American International Group alone? Oh, but veterans' benefits and cancer research might cost money. It might require, dare I say it, paying taxes. If the whiners at Fox News want to advertise their selfishness, they're free to do so. But please don't dress it up as patriotism. Patriotism is putting your country ahead of yourself, which is the precise opposite of what the Tea Party plutocrats are doing. That was just damned fine as far as I'm concerned. And so just to wrap up the teabaggers, this.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, anti-CNN, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network Fox.
Celebrate.
Oh, here we go.
Liberty
and freedom.
And freedom, of course, we're talking about the tea parties going on across the country all day long.
But you could hang it from your mirror, too, like fuzzy dice.
And here are the remnants of the tea bag tax. They protest against the Obama administration tax policies.
The Tea Party Revolution.
There's probably one right by you.
We have a map to show you just how widespread these are. Comes from Newt Gingrich's organization. Bam, Fox News is out in front of this.
Americans are making their voices heard as they fight for their future. Neil is giving them a voice. Total, fair, and balanced network up.
Bye.
It's a movement that is sweeping the nation all across the country.
Partying 1773 style.
We're live on Taxed Enough Already, or Tea Party Day.
I want you to look at this very impressive collection of young Americans here.
Hundreds of these protests across the country and may involve millions of people.
That's John Gibson.
Hopefully millions of people.
Now she's paying for the $800 billion Republican-Democrat.
Enough already. By the way, T as in Tea Party stands for Taxed Enough Already. Really? Because... I'm pretty sure, I mean, I, granted, we're not doing video here, so you can't see what I'm seeing. But I've seen a bunch of people in these crowds, and I didn't see anyone there who looked like they were hauling down $250,000 a year. So for everybody hauling down $249,999.99 a year, and less, Barack Obama agrees. Taxed enough already. That's why... Dumbasses, you got a tax cut. Just really some not very bright people here. But then again, when did we ever think that they were? So, you know, just saying. Let's see, to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I have one way to describe these people.
Yes.
Sucker.
Yeah, morons, suckers, yeah. But the thing is, it's like that other Fields rule, Susan. You know, never smarten up a chump. These chumps are not only not going to get smartened up, they don't want to be smartened up. They will resist smartening up. They will swear up and down that they're dealing with facts when the facts, the contrary facts are presented to them.
Yeah. And by the way, you can expect another story to come out about how their, free speech rights have been oppressed. Why? Because one of these right-wing idiots in D.C. tossed a package over the White House fence. Needless to say, the Secret Service reacted appropriately and shut the demonstration down.
Jackasses. I mean card-carrying members of the Jackassed Society.
Yes. You know, we put a million people in the streets of Washington, D.C. How many packages were tossed over the White House fence? None. Because we knew better. Ah, you idiots.
Yeah.
You don't go begging to get your head busted.
And see, I mean, I see a headline, you know, Obama to teabaggers, I've already cut taxes. And they respond, yeah, but you're a fascist. Yeah, but you're a Maoist.
Yeah, but you're black, and that's...
Well, there is that now, isn't there?
And that's what they cannot swallow. That and the fact that he's smart. Now, I got my problems with him, God knows. And I will continue to howl at the top of my lungs over those problems. But the man is brilliant.
Yeah, he is. And so, but that's the thing. It's reminiscent of the title of that wonderful book by John Kennedy Toole, The Confederacy of Dunces, which is based on a quote from Jonathan Swift or somebody, you know, like that, that wherever you see, you will know a brilliant man by the fact that wherever he is, he will be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces. Yes. And how true that is now. And by the way, that's a hilarious book for anyone who hasn't read it. It's on my like top 25 list. This is the Confederacy of the, you know, the Republican Party, Susan, is officially the Confederacy of Dunces.
Yeah.
That surrounds the brilliant man.
And I can tell you one other thing besides The Handmaid's Tale the right wing wants. They want Barack Obama dead.
Yeah, I was kind of trying to resist say that. I've said that a couple of times, and I'm really nervous about saying it. And I did, yeah.
If it will keep the Secret Service on their toes and make real good and sure that that cannot happen, I'll say it as often as need be because I will never ever harm that man.
No, this is about trying to prevent it.
Yeah, I want them to make dang good sure that another Dallas does not happen. I can't live through that again. I won't do it. It's just, I can't handle it. I've been there, done that. I'm not capable of handling that again. But it's just, the right wing are just so fundamentally freaked by this particular president. If Hillary had won, they would have been able to dismiss her as a woman and, you know, just, No, she's a woman. The men around her are doing the work. She's just figuring it. But they can't do that with Barack Obama.
Let's see. Seen on some signs around teabagging parties today, Susan. Hitler gave speeches, too.
Yeah.
Another sign on a child. I'm only 4 and I'm in debt. And another one, 3 simple words, yet so complex in their import. Revolution or death.
Secret Service, I hope you're paying attention. These people are scary.
And they are dangerous. Yeah. Again, we're not the ones who go into churches and blow away. You know, there haven't been any shootings in any conservative churches by some liberal going in and trying to wipe out the people killing this country. No, hell no. Instead, the liberals go to liberal churches and fall on their knees and pray to a God they hope exists that these people will come to their senses and stop hurting us.
Yeah, and the closest liberals have come to hurting anyone is if somebody bursts into a rendition of This Land Is Your Land and they happen to be singing off key and they hurt their ears.
And Lord knows I could be that person because I can't carry a tune in a bucket.
You both.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't go around killing people. That's the right wingers.
I know that. You know that. Right.
That's why it was so easy to do that left-wing report, because, hey, most of the radical left-wingers, they're long gone, or they have come around to the nonviolence ideal and said, hey, this is just not worth it.
But, you want... I remember a long time ago, maybe this time last year, as the campaign was, no, maybe this time 2 years ago, as the campaign was ramping up, saying it's going to get uglier and uglier and uglier. And maybe I, in my optimism, Susan, thought that there might be some let up after the election. Wow, was I wrong. Latest exhibit, you know, exhibit. Google, Plex, Avogadro's number, whatever. Governor Rick Perry, the dog, flying spaghetti monster, god, goddess, whatever, rest her soul, Molly Ivins used to refer to as Rick Goodhair Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a real doofus. I mean, bad. He attended a teabagger party today. And told them that you all are not right-wing extremists. Nobody said they were.
No.
But
they might.
He told them
eventually.
But wait. Here's the fun part. You all are not right-wing extremists, but if you are, I'm with you.
Oh, lovely.
No, Ginsu commercial continueth. But wait, there's more. After he gave the speech, Susan, Rick Goodhair Perry, followed that up by delivering some remarks to the press.
I'm afraid. I'm very afraid.
Yeah, you should be. He said, you know, Texans are... And you know what? Let me just throw this out there. If you are listening to this program and you're in Texas, for God's sakes, let the rest of the world hear you refute this dumb bastard and call the program and speak your mind, because Governor Rick Goodhair Perry of Texas said to reporters that Texans might get so frustrated, this is a quote from the article, that Texans might get so frustrated with the government they would want to secede from the union. This is the quote. There's absolutely no reason to dissolve it, but if Washington continues to thumb their nose at the American people, you know, who knows what might come out of that? These stupid bastards are talking secession again.
I know quite a few Texans. In fact, one of the Texans I know lives about 20 miles from Crawford. our former fearless leader's nesting spot. That particular Texan's opinion of George was, that son of a bitch is no Texan. She's a Texan. Her ancestry goes all the way back to San Jacinto.
Right, and I don't know what the pedigree is on Rick Goodhair Perry. This stuff's dangerous, Susan. Earlier in the week.
Do you want to know what her opinion of these guys, of the right wingers in Texas is?
Sure.
Okay, Texas used to be a super right, super southern, you know, super democratic state right up until, the big boom started and all these carpetbaggers, and that's what her term for it was, all the carpetbaggers came down from the north. And they were all Republicans. And they took over the state.
Well, but there's also another dynamic that works in there, Susan, and I'm sure you're aware as well. The Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
Lyndon Johnson, Texan, was right. We will lose the South for a generation, he said. So earlier in the week, Rick Goodhair Perry says the following. Again, a quote. I believe the federal government has become oppressive. I believe it's become oppressive in its size, its intrusion into the lives of its citizens, and its interferences with the affairs of our state. Really?
From the people I know in Texas, they're telling me by the time of the next presidential election, watch Texas go blue.
Sure would be nice. I mean, I know that for a number of people that I have contact with, including but not limited to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, that this kind of stuff just drives them just water spitting crazy.
Because they have just had it up to the eyeballs. They would have gone blue before this except for the gerrymandering.
You could make that argument. You could.
Yep.
But these are people talking. And look, nobody cherishes the First Amendment more than I.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize when speech is inflammatory.
Yep.
I recognize when rhetoric is used to do dishonest things. And this is that. These people don't want, Susan, they don't want an open dialogue with those of us who disagree. Those of us who disagree with them, they want us to die.
Exactly.
That's why they're stockpiling guns. That's why they're stockpiling ammo. That's why they're talking about waterboarding the elected president of the United States. You know, I remember once, way back when I was doing terrestrial radio, and I showed, and it was after Alberto Gonzalez had been revealed as having argued, and this was, you know, the John Yoo memo.
Yeah.
That if it didn't cause serious bodily harm, organ failure, or death, that it wasn't torture. And I wrote up this little skit, just jotted down some notes of what I planned to do on the air that evening. And it all had to do with the Senate committee questioning Alberto Gonzalez and asking him questions about torture, and then having his 12-year-old son come up and stand on a wooden block and have his testicles attached to some jumper cables and having a die-hard battery nearby.
Yeah.
And saying, Mr. Gonzalez, you know, now if we just give him a little jolt, it won't cause him any organ failure, bodily harm, or serious bodily harm or death. You're telling me that that's not torture, right? And I ran that past Agnes, and she said, Bob, you can't do that on the air. That's just too mean.
Yeah, because you're not one of them.
But now, tonight, I have heard, if you could waterboard Barack Obama, what would you try to get out of him?
And I sincerely hope the Secret Service is paying attention to that. I hope whoever it was that said that gets a visit from a couple of guys with absolutely no sense of humor.
But in a way, that'll just ratchet them up more. See, they're targeting us, just like that Obama report on right-wing extremism said. And nobody will tell them that it was a Bush administration report.
Well, you have to draw.
I mean, we are in a, we are, I fear, Susan, I legitimately fear that we are approaching a real live, honest-to-goodness bind. Because from Texas to the northern panhandle of Florida to South Carolina, South Carolina, sweet Jesus, you know, they started this mess. All across the old Confederacy, you don't have to look hard before you find a bumper sticker or a tag or somebody's website that says, the South will rise again.
Well, I got to tell you.
And, you and I are Scots-Irish, right?
Yep.
And we know what cranky, cantankerous people we can be.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there is an element in the old South, the old Confederacy, that is still smarting. And, you know, I've had Yankees, or I mean Northern people, because I'm one too, say, you know, why don't you people let it go? And Scots people are still worked up about the Battle of Flodden Field or Culloden or what the hell ever.
Or a couple hundred years before that. Hey, we're still pissed off about the Battle of Bannockburn for crying in the beer.
Yeah, well, okay, there you go. Panic, but sure. When Andrew Jackson, who has plenty of freight roasted, continuing to roast him in hell, Trail of Tears, that kind of stuff. But when he was president and South Carolina started rumbling secession, he said, boys, I'm going to get on my horse. I'm going to take me a whip, a rope, a couple of guns. And I'm gonna get on my horse and I'm gonna ride down South Carolina. And when I get to South Carolina, I'm gonna find the first secessionist I can. The minute I find him, I'm gonna hang him. And then I'm gonna get me another rope, and I'm gonna go a little further down the road. And the second secessionist I find, I'm gonna hang him. And I'm gonna hang them all till there ain't no secessionist talk left in South Carolina. And all of a sudden, understanding, you know, when bullies get bullied back, when you talk to a bully the way a bully talks, bullies back down.
Yeah.
And South Carolina got a little bit quiet for a while. Because they believed that old Hickory would do that.
He would have.
And likely enjoy it.
He would have.
But they didn't, but they didn't stay calm. And they didn't stay quiet. And honest to God, I hate to even say it, because unlike Abraham Lincoln, Barack Obama is not doing anything overtly, like, you know, raising a private army, although they've accused him of that. He's not doing any of the stuff that Lincoln did to really gin up the emotions of the South. I'm just trying to fix a problem. But their response is the same thing. All these years later, century and a half later, their response is the same thing.
Yeah. Because what were the old slave owners of the South terrified of? Utterly terrified of.
Black folks having to do their own work, you know.
A slave uprising.
One of the, yeah. And by the way, if they do secede, Susan, what are we what are we going to name them? Oh God, I may be in. Oh please, let's assume that it's the old Confederacy. Can we rename them Dumbassistan?
Not a bad idea. But
well, that's just how we pronounce it up here. Y'all call it whatever you want, but we're going to call you Dumbassistan.
Let's face it. The Old South was terrified of an uprising. Now, you take that attitude, transport, you know, push it forward to today. Who's sitting in the White House?
Yeah.
It bypasses the forebrain and starts reacting on the monkey brain of these people, and they're going nuts. Because they're reverting right back into that slave owner, that pre-Civil War thing, they're coming to get your women.
Yeah.
But.
And the lizard brain just gears down.
Yeah, the lizard brain just went completely gaga. Never mind the fact that Barack Obama could really care less. Because Barack Obama has his own life. They don't see it that way. They just take one look at him and panic.
Wow.
And on top of it all, he's a Democrat.
Yeah. I'm not even going the rest of the way on that one. No. Just ain't gonna. Susan, great talking to you, dear.
Yeah, you guys have fun. And blessed be.
Hang in there.
And by the way,
yep.
On behalf of all the Pastafarians, please believe that the pirates have no relation to the flying spaghetti monster.
Right, wrong pirates.
Blessed be his nudity goodness.
Yeah, because I have yet to hear any of the Somali pirates say, yar.
Exactly.
You gotta say yar. Later, Susan.
Okay, later. Bye.
Bye. And we'll keep rolling in a minute. Again, light it up if you want to. But this secession business, they're actually talking it now. That was the governor of Texas talking secession. That was the governor of Texas saying, I don't think y'all are right-wing extremists, but if you are, I'm with you. There's absolutely no talking about the union. There's absolutely no reason to dissolve it. Rick, are you really that dumb? There was a decision made at the cost of much blood and treasure that this is an indissoluble union. We are too tightly intertwined and too interbound to dissolve it. You remember, I'm sure you hate the guy and his words, but testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived the Gettysburg Address 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war to determine whether that nation or any nation so conceived can long endure. I see the word secede, and because I am a Southerner, I mean, I don't have the camera for the close-up, but there are little chills on the back of little chill bumps on the back of my neck and the backs of my arms. That hateful word, that bloody word, that filthy word, that mumbled and prattled and prated and tossed around like some sort of the party favor by people who did not stand to lose nearly what was lost. Secession. Because I am a Southerner, because I know the history, words like Shiloh and the wilderness and the peninsula and the 7 days and Franklin, words like Gettysburg and Manassas and Antietam, Sharpsburg. Those words have real meaning for me. The solemn, beautiful monuments that dot the protected battlefields of our Civil War, put there not to glorify it, but as a stern and enduring reminder to this nation never to do what was done then again. Those monuments speak. Those monuments to Alabama and Mississippi and South Carolina, to Wisconsin and Iowa and Ohio and New York, that dot the ground at places like Shiloh and Gettysburg. Those monuments aren't there as tourist attractions or staging grounds for reenactors. Those monuments in granite and marble and concrete are made of hardened blood. And it is Southern blood and Northern blood and white blood and black blood and Jewish blood and Christian blood and Irish blood and German blood. And all of that blood cries out. Never again. Never again. Never again. And so when I see an idiot like Rick Perry blithely tossing that word about, I do want to kind of break all Southern on him. And wish that somebody down there with as much of a, and there's plenty of Texans with a long history, long understanding, a deep understanding of Civil War history and what led up to it and what went on during it and what happened after. John Bell Hood came across from Texas and I think wound up there as well. Somebody needs to straighten out Rick Perry, because it's all well and good and big fun with your Southern accent to talk about There's absolutely no reason to dissolve it, but if Washington continues to thumb their nose at the American people, you know, who knows what might come out of that. Because even before there were such places known to history as Fort Sumter or Shiloh or Gettysburg or Franklin or any of the other 100 different sources of heartache and tragedy, misery, muck, and blood, there were calm, sane, rational voices in the South saying, you know, boys, we can't do this. We can't win this. They got all the money, they got all the guns, they got all the factories, and they got a steady stream of human beings floating across the Atlantic, and we don't. But the idiots won the day. The hotheads in the state legislatures talking the same kind of talk that Rick Perry is talking today carried the day. And rational men, like Robert Lee, who did not want the war, who advocated against the war, but in the end made the benighted decision that his state came before his nation, and that was a mindset of the pre-Civil War era, that states were sovereign to the nation. Followed the fools. Followed the fools. No reason to dissolve it. If there's no reason to dissolve it, there's no reason to say that there's no reason to dissolve it. I know that might sound a little bit tortured. But really, you only raised that filthy word, that dirty, bloody concept, if somewhere in your heart there is a dream that it be reality. Dangerous, bloodthirsty, ignorant fools. South's going to rise again. The South will rise again. The South will rise again when it stops electing the Jeff Sessionses and the Rick Perrys and the Bob Corkers and the Jim DeMitteds. When it stops electing the Mark Sanfords and the Mitch McConnells, the South will rise. The South will rise when working people finally bust out of about 400 years of proto-feudalism and learn to stand on their own hind feet and demand all the way from Texas and Oklahoma eastward to South Carolina that they be allowed, Jesus, that they be allowed to form unions, to demand fair pay for a fair day's work. That day the South will, indeed, rise again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. What's up?
Well, I drive around the country, and sometimes, even in the north, I would see a Confederate flag in somebody's yard.
Oh, yeah.
And just so it just makes me think. It's usually a low-income person. So it just makes me think, what if the South won? I mean, they think it's bad now. Just think what it would be like if the South did win.
Well, if the South had won, the Confederacy never would have survived. I mean, that's my opinion. If the South had won, the Confederacy never would have survived, Alan. It would have been co-opted by Britain or France,
uh-huh.
And would have busted. It would have been balkanized. You know, maybe two states would have banded together under Britain's flag and another couple of states under Spain's or the France's, Russia's, Germany's, whatever.
Well, I was thinking it'd be more like a dictator, monopoly.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you would see that absolutely, and the fascism, once it was born, would have gotten a humongous foothold in any Confederacy had. But the thing is, the South, Alan, the South could not win. The whole purpose of Lee marching up into Pennsylvania was to make the North sit down and negotiate. There was not a rational military mind in the South who thought realistically that the North could be beaten. Now, the South could outgeneral them and did. The South could outfight them and did. But they could never compete with the production abilities. It was very early in the Civil War that the South lost all of its bays, all of its seaports, and lost its rivers. You know, one of the first things that happened was the Army of the Cumberland, I guess it was, took Nashville, Fort Donelson, and worked its way on down to, so that the rivers, you know, and then I guess what was it, July the 4th, 1863, at the same time that Gettysburg was going on, Vicksburg was falling in Mississippi. Well, they couldn't win.
I could put it a different way. If the South seceded from the Union, I would think that the average Southerner would have been much worse off than it is with one as one country.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
That was more like a dictatorship. I heard that the poor Southerners during slavery was really bad off. So,
well, everybody was bad off during in the pre-Civil War South, with the exception of the planter class and the very small merchant class.
So I always think that when I see middle class Southerners going around with Confederate flags on their pickup trucks, they don't know what in the world they're thinking about. And I'm saying this as a Southerner myself.
I know, and you and I are simpatico on that. First of all, they don't know what they're displaying. They're displaying it out of overt racism, or they're displaying it as an act of rebellion. They see most of them that flag, you know, the red field with the blue bars with the stars in them, the Confederate battle flag. Most of them can't tell you it's a Confederate battle flag. They think it's the stars and bars. And they just put it up as a matter of rebellion.
Oh, well. I forgot what I was going to say. But they would be much worse off, I'm sure. And I was going to say that the Ku Klux Klan was. I heard that it was originally made not just to go against black people, but it was organized to go against poor white people trying to.
Oh, it was social control across the board. Yes.
Uh huh.
But it was founded up in Pulaski, Tennessee. If you just go up 43 from the Shoals area of Alabama into Tennessee, you will come very quickly upon Pulaski. It was founded at Pulaski, Tennessee, by unrepentant Confederate soldiers and Confederate officers, and it was founded for purposes of wreaking vengeance. It was, from its very inception, a terrorist organization that wanted to take out vengeance upon enfranchised and empowered freed slaves and people who believed that they should be empowered and enfranchised, who happened to be white and come down from the North, who were known, and you know the word as well as I do, carpetbaggers.
Yeah. Oh, you were talking earlier about, let's see, you were talking about the Vatican I remember when they were debating in the Senate about sending, first sending ambassador to the Vatican, and I sent a letter to my senator, which at that time was Jeremiah Denton. You remember him?
Yeah, very well.
Well, Jeremiah Denton, he didn't agree with me, but I told him it was unconstitutional to send an ambassador to a religious organization such as the Vatican, which I don't care how big it is, it's still unconstitutional because we're supposed to have a separation of church and state.
I think that's a valid argument, Alan, you know, to have diplomatic relations with some, with a place that is only a religion. It's not a religious state. I mean, Iran is a state that is run by a religion, but Iran is a real country. The Vatican isn't.
Uh-huh.
The Vatican's just a church.
Yeah, it's just made to be that way. Yeah, that was one of the arguments he had with me, something like about Israel. We have an ambassador to Israel, but that's more like a government there, which Israel has different people of different religions in it also. And see, Jeremiah Denton lost to Richard Shelby. Richard Shelby was a Democrat, and he changed over to Republicans, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear about the survey they're having? I heard about it on the radio news, where they're asking people whether they're socialist or capitalist. I said, why should it be either way? Why can't it be a little bit of both, like it really is right now, and it's always been? Seems like it's one extreme to the other.
Well, but the for-profit media and the people who ask those kind of poll questions, Alan, cannot deal with a blended world. It doesn't make for good polling data. It doesn't make for good theater, which is so much of what on-air broadcast media are.
Yeah, particularly Fox News, and Fox News is the second largest stockholder is Prince Alawi of Saudi Arabia. What a coincidence. And you were talking about Texas, and I've been through Texas a lot of times, and it seems like most people in Texas now is like hard-working Mexicans. Or people from Mexico, which probably have their, probably lived here all their life and really are U.S. citizens. And I wouldn't think it'd go over too well if we tried to secede from the Union.
No, it wouldn't go over well with a lot of people, but with some it would be, woo-wee, bring them on! You know how it is. The same way in Alabama, there's always that segment. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't fight us fair and square. I've heard it. I bet you have too, Al.
Yeah. Oh, Steve, yeah. Ignorance is mind-blowing. Well, I appreciate it.
Oh, no trouble at all. Where are you?
I'm still on the Manassas waiting for a load. I haven't gone to the battlefields because it's all raining today. But
yeah, kind of miserable today, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've been to them before, but you just can't go to all of them. There's so much of it here.
That's true. That's very true. Well, stay safe, and when you get a load, let us know where you're headed.
Okay, all right.
All right, take care, Al.
All right.
Bye now. That's our buddy Alan the trucker up in the rain in Manassas, Virginia. I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break and come back. Light up the phones if you want to. I got a story on the in the stack here that sort of dovetails with some other stuff. You might find interesting. I don't know. But other stuff on the plate as well. But you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
This isn't Alabama. Oh, how will I know? I'm in central Germany, where I love to go. Then how come I am sick?
Mike's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Couldn't resist the tune. For those of you wondering, from his 2004 release, that's Jason Ringenberg. Name of the album, Empire Builder. Name of the song, Rebel Flag in Germany. I love that line. Hell, I don't even want to see that thing in Tennessee. Me neither. Let the dead past bury its dead. And I am heading straight back to the phones just in a matter of minutes, but just so you'll know that old Bob ain't pulling your leg none, I got the audio handy of Rick Goodhair Perry. Thought you might want to hear it.
Texas is a unique place. When we came in the Union in 1845, one of the issues was that we would be able to leave if we decided to do that.
My hope is that America, and Washington in particular, pays attention. We got a great union. There's absolutely no reason to dissolve it. But if Washington continues to thumb their nose at the American people, you know, who knows what may come out of that. So, Texas is a very unique place, and we're...
Wait for it.
Pretty independent lot to boot.
Now that you've pledged your allegiance with the radicalized right-wing extremists, I'm just wondering if you think that we might now be considered an...
How, how, how!
I don't believe we quite get into that category. I have no idea who that numbskull was that wrote that, but I would suggest to you that you probably can't find them in the Homeland Security Department today. They're probably in deep hiding.
Well, one would hope. Thank you so much.
A little problem there, Rick. Governor Rick. A little problem. Probably can't find him in the Department of Homeland Security today. That might be true, Rick. Goodhair. Perry. But if you can't find him in the Department of Homeland Security today, it's probably because they went out with George W. Bush because he commissioned the damn report, you poop-eating mongrel, you. You dirty lying... Yeah. Yeah. But you know, these people, again, you know, I said, you know, for those of us who have a historical working knowledge of places like Shiloh and Franklin and Gettysburg and Sharpsburg and Manassas and so forth, and you know, the important part about that is the working historical knowledge. Over at Crooks and Liars, where this audio came from, John Amato notes where Perry says that, says, quote, when we came into the Union in 1845, did you notice how much he sounds like Dim Leader? Same vocalizations and everything. I wonder if that's catching in the governor's office or something. Or if you have to do that sort of Mr. Rogers cadence to get across to a right-wing legislature. I don't know. But he says, Texas is a unique place. When we came into the Union in 1845, one of the issues was that we would be able to leave if we decided to do that. Dumbass liar. It turns out that Texas came into the Union in 1845 with the ability to divide into five states, not leave. However, all bets were off as of the Civil War when Texas did secede as one state and had to be later readmitted. So one could argue that by virtue of Texas breaching the social contract with which it was admitted to the Union, it lost that five-state thing. But one should never think that that would ever get in the way of some wingnut. Let's go to the phones. Hey, Bob.
Hey.
What's up?
You know, I'm a mite bit confused.
No, just a mite bit confused. You know, we've been deluged by this mythology of what the right wing wants us to think this country was founded on, which is not anywhere near the truth. This country...
Well, darn good point. Darn good point, Bob. And, you know, let's start with just one basic question. If this country was, as the right wing says, founded as a Christian nation, why was this nation founded with slavery?
Why, indeed. But we got to ask ourselves, what was this Boston Tea Party in the first place? It was a tax protest, yes, but it wasn't a tax protest against the taxes being levied against the people of this nation. It was a tax protest against taxes being stripped away from a corporation. It was a.
There you go.
It was a corporation that said, we don't have to pay taxes anymore, you know, because the king has granted us, no taxation against the the Walmart of the era, the East West Indies Company, that said, hey, you know, King George, take away our taxes and put it on the people. And the people said, no.
Well, and it wasn't just that, Bob. It was also the fact that Britain had just gotten done fighting a costly and lengthy ongoing war with its perpetual nemesis, France.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I'll bet you the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, would agree with me on this. To be fair, what the Crown was asking was that the colonies, wherein had been fought a substantial portion of that war, which we now refer to as the French and Indian War, which was actually the French and British War.
Right.
What the Crown wanted was for the colonies to actually pay some of the freight for their asses being saved.
Yeah, exactly. But, see, I'm a mite bit confused. What I'm saying, okay?
Right. Well, you ain't the onlyest one, brother.
I mean, teabaggers that, you know, okay, a bag of tea, you know, just one little bag of green tea, Lipton tea, whatever. You stuff it in an envelope, and then you send it to your, your congressional delegation, right? And they're costing, like you said, the American taxpayer millions of dollars for what? So they can protest? Come on, Bob. You know, that's not a liberal dare I say, the word progressive, because I'm a liberal. I know what a liberal does when he is faced with a situation that's, you know, untenable. Usually, if the conversation is so bleak and, you know, and twisted, he will just say, and walk away from it, and say, it's not worth getting involved with. But when you hear someone denigrating another human being, or beating a child, or you see a man attacking his wife, you step in and say, no more, that's enough. Stop it, mister. And we will take a stand. And it's always on the side of decency. That's the difference between a liberal and a conservative. And I'm going to use the word conservative because I lived that as a child. I heard all this wonderful stuff about, you know, conservatism from my father, who was earning less than a buck and a quarter an hour, working in a creamery. He'd come home, he'd spew out, I like Ike and all this stuff, about how wonderful the conservatives were, and they were staunch Republicans, but they lived in poverty, and we lived in poverty. The only time I ever had shoes is when I went to school. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
It wasn't like, okay, my father was some great, man. He was a working stiff who earned a buck and a quarter an hour. And that was, back in the, late 40s, early 50s. And thought that, being a conservative was the way of the nation. And, nothing changed for a long time. We lived in poverty. But then a man by the name of, what was his name again? John Fitzgerald Kennedy came along. And he said he cared about the people. He cared about their homes, their schools, and their education. And he cared, and he wanted to make a change. And I have to look at this young, vibrant president that we have today and say, he's not John Fitzgerald Kennedy, but he's the closest thing we got. And he's making some changes. He can't, put us back to, the Stone Age, the time right after World War II. And he can't bring us into the 21st century, because George Bush brought us to the 21st century. And the 21st century is a lot like, what was that one we were just talking about? The 18th, the 19th century?
Yeah, you'll have that when you've got 19th century minds.
Yeah, and that's what we have. And you were talking about Texas and when Texas was formed and the people that went there and supposedly, I can't say I wasn't in the Battle of San Jacinto, and I wasn't in the Alamo with Davy Crockett. But I think a lot of things have been misconstrued from that time, too.
Oh, heck yeah.
There's a lot of...
Just remember, the Alamo was a pro-slavery fight. All those heroes and those 13 Days of Glory and that John Wayne movie, they were fighting for the rights of Texans to own other human beings. How noble.
Yes, and that's where history has been so twisted, and the people, and I'm talking about myself included in this, have been so cowed. We have been so anesthetized. We've been, somebody gave us a big drop of LSD or something in our coffee. We have been so bamboozled that, what's happening with these tea parties and everything, it's just the stupid being led by the more stupid, the more unqualified. They're less than sheep. At least sheep know to gather together when the wolves are surrounding them. But no, we scatter, and that is what they are perfect at. And this is the only thing that I see from this. Alexander the Great was perfect at it. Divide and conquer. You divide the army. You split it down the middle. And the only, you were talking about other battles of the Civil War, and I thought about Gettysburg when Pickett's charge almost split the Union forces, and that was Robert E. Lee's idea to send that division down the middle to split the Union forces and divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old adage, but they didn't break the Union lines there, and they were slaughtered. And 59,000 men died, not counting horses, mules, oxen, and other sundry living creatures that were destroyed in that battle, and not counting the civilian casualties, right? See, 59,000, because I remember that battle, that one battle. But the one thing they did not do was break they're doing it, Bob. They're doing it incessantly because they know as long as they divide the American people, we came together. We united under one front to remove George W. Bush under any circumstances and the Republican Party from the Oval Office and the Congress, and that means the Senate and the House, to remove them as best we could. And we fought, we worked, we were so united that they could not break us apart. And now they're trying to divide us again on a fallacy, on a lie, on that same thing. Tell them they're being taxed when, please, reality tells me that Obama, in less than his first 100 days, gave tax breaks to 95% of us. 95% of the American people got a tax break. What he is trying to do is reunite us in a strong force, and we can't allow this mainstream media that is owned and operated by less than 1% of the people of the earth, and that's not the United States, the people of the earth are deluged daily by this idiot box you call the television.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what they watch, on what channel, it doesn't matter on what nation, it is controlled by less than 1% of the people of this planet. And we, the people of this planet, either wake up or just let it happen. And, Bob, I can't do that. I can't go to my grave thinking I did nothing. I just sat here and soaked it all up and became a fat, ugly blob sitting in front of a golden microphone or something, okay? I can't become a Rush Limbaugh. I cannot allow it because I still have a few, Ingrams inside of my skull that fire sometimes possibly in synchronicity, and I can actually see what's happening. And one of the things that I see is they are dividing. They're dividing the American people along something that doesn't even exist. They're trying to break the center, break that strength that we had when we elected Barack Obama by the largest majority of any. And I'm thinking back a long way. Barack Obama is our last best hope. You know why? Not because he's black. Not because he's a Democrat. Not because he's a liberal. Because he sure the hell ain't a liberal. But because he is a good man. See, and there's the difference between him and George Bush and at all. He's a good man. He's not a perfect man. And all we need is a good man that will do something. He doesn't have to do everything. He'll do something. And it's kind of like a thing. All it takes for evil to win, to become the most powerful thing, is for a good man to do nothing. And by God, we got a good man. He's doing something. I don't know if it's going to pull us out of the morass we're in. I have no idea. But I know this. He's a good man, and he's doing something. And that means something. And if we, other good men, don't do something, you do a great deal just by getting your voice out on the Internet. Me, I do a little bit here and there. I stand up against bigots. I stand up against, just whatever. I put my face in there and say, that's enough. Stop it. And most people, when they see me in front of them, they stop it. Because there's just something in me that will not allow it. I've done things in my life. I look back. The best thing that I ever did was I saw this group of teenagers, and they were outside of a roller skating rink, and they were all lining their cars up, and their headlights pointed toward the middle, and there was two girls out there, and one had called one another name, and one had called the other one another name, and they were lining up. One of them smacked the other one in the nose, and one was bleeding through the nose, and everybody's looking for a good cat fight, right? I stepped in there and grabbed one by the wrist, grabbed the other one by the wrist, and I said, which one of you do you want me to take downtown? Because I'm making the citizens arrest for assault on one of you right here and now. And I broke it up. I sent the one to the, you know, inside to get cleaned up, and I told the other one, I saw you strike the blow. You want to go downtown with me? I'll take you down there, and I will swear the complaint against you for assault and battery, and you can set me in jail tonight and have your folks come and get you in the morning. And I broke, and every one of those kids in that crowd booed when I broke it up. But by God, Bob, I did the right thing. I stopped one child from hurting another one.
Yep.
And that's what we got to do. See, it doesn't matter the multitude that you face. If you face it with just courage and then conviction. I don't care about your faith, but conviction of knowing that what you're doing is right. Obama, I don't know if he's the best man, but he's the man we got right now. He is my president. And by God, he's your president too. You know, but I know you stand behind him. And I know that the people that listen to this program stand behind him. We don't agree with him on everything. And that's even better. Because, see, we don't have to agree. We don't have to kowtow. We can voice our opinion. And we can send him our messages. But we don't do this teabagging stuff. That's not liberal tactic. We don't do this silly, try to bust it up. We do, and we probably are, like they say, herding cats. The one thing we have is we have an idea, and we have hope. Hope. See, we don't know that what we're doing is absolutely perfect, but we know it's better than what has been done. See, not by us, but by our parents. We saw what they did. When they, you know, with
well, you know, you mentioned our parents, Bob, and I want to run something past you, and for everybody else in the audience as well. I checked my mail in the morning, and one of our buddies is a guy named Dennis, and Dennis is always sending me these really really cool YouTube links, and. This morning, it was a Disney cartoon, of all things. And for those who want to go find it on YouTube, it's called The Spirit of 43, starring Donald Duck. That's how it's slugged on YouTube. The Spirit of 43, starring Donald Duck. Just hang out here for just a second. And listen to what's going on, because I think this will tie right in with what you were just talking about, what our parents accomplished, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Of dollars pouring into the hands of the American worker. Now, in the mind of the average worker, live two separate personalities. One, the thrifty.
Wait a bit, laddie. You're going to save a bit of that, aren't you?
Oftentimes, idle money burns a hole in your pocket. which brings out the other personality, the spendthrift.
Hey, Big Jack, come on with me. I'll show you how to spend your dough.
It's a bar labeled Welcome Sucker.
Yep.
But, Laddie, I've got some better deets.
Important ones, too. When every American should pay his or her income tax gladly and proudly. This year, thanks to Hitler and Hirohito, taxes are higher than ever before. Will you have enough money on hand to meet your payments when they fall due?
We'll take care of that later. Forget it, forget it.
But you don't want to forget our fighting men, do you?
No, sir.
Then you'll have to start saving right away to meet your tax payments.
Listen, Chow. Spend it. It's your dough.
Yeah, it's my dough.
Hey, Bob. Where have we heard that before? It's your dough. We need a tax cut. It's your money.
That too.
And so this cartoon continues I'm not going to run the whole thing.
Okay. But I get the gist, but.
Yeah, but it lays it out there and it points out that, you know, if you want to do things like beat fascism.
Right.
That takes money.
You know, and Bob, you know, if you go back to those days, they had war bonds. People
who couldn't buy war bonds bought bond stamps, little chunks of bonds, and they saved the stamps.
I still got some, Bob. I still have some in a collect of those, you know, little airplanes, and, you know, they were, you know, it wasn't postage stamps, it were stamps that you would fill up. You'd fill up the booklet so far, and then you'd get a war bond, you know? And it was just a... You know, you got to a certain point, you had to fill the book, but then the war was over, and there were still some of these, and I have one still.
Darn, if you think about $1945 dollars, I'll bet that thing's worth a fortune.
Hey, I have.
Because we're probably still paying off on it.
I still have 88 records, too, and I got a player that'll play them. I just don't play them anymore because it's too valuable just
in
the collection. See, it's those things that meant something to our generation, and we grew up in a different time. Now it's been twisted so that history is not taught in our high schools or our grade schools. Not really history. It's just certain events that propagate what they want people to believe history is. We just talked about, you know, Texas, when it became a nation, one star, right? And
right.
Joined the Union and then separated from the Union, and the things that they had in their confederation given up, and now they're trying to reclaim in some strange way that they have a right to secessionist ideas, but we're not trying to secede because, you know, that would be great. I mean, I have no idea. I have no difficulty with Texas seceding from the Union, take Arizona and California and give it back to the Mexicans, because eventually that's whose land it was. But before that, let's give it back to the Aztecs or back to the Mayans. We can't go back in history, but they're trying to take us backwards in thought, which is even worse than taking us back to the time when the first colonists came to this nation and then divided and conquered. They divided the Indians' nations because they had tribal lands that they protected. It was their territory. They had done it for thousands of years, as far as I know. And then, again, people invaded their shores, took their land and their space, pushed them further and further west until a few events happened, and we ended up where we're at today. We did not build a nation. We sold one, and we used, and it was abhorrent tactics. You know, we used slavery, and we used genocide, and we used bigotry. We taught our children to hate. They didn't. They weren't born naturally.
No child is.
A human being is born without those traits. They are taught. We're being drilled daily, every day, by these hate tactics. And right now, they're trying to teach the American people to hate their president because of his, what, policies? The policies haven't even really taken effect. We don't know what's going to come down the road. I wish, you know, but this is wishful thinking, that Barack Obama was a FDR, but he's not, okay? He has some of FDR's traits. He has some of his speaking ability and his ability to rally people. He has that. But I don't think he has the same, I don't know, chutzpah, maybe that's the word. You know, I'm in charge, boom, you're going to do it my way. That FDR did. FDR just said, slam the hammer down and put it on the floor. This is what's going to happen. It's going to happen today, and this is what we're going to do. Well, I don't know that Barack Obama has that kind of, I don't see it in him. He's not a hammer. He is a brain surgeon, and he's trying with all of his skill, ability, his intellect, his knowledge, to revive what is a dead corpse, Bob. Basically, our capitalist system is dead in the water. It died, and it was killed by the Republicans. But yet, Obama's trying to breathe life into it. And I don't know that he can. And if he does, it'll just be another...
Well, I think you're getting ready to touch on something there, Bob, and that is this. The frustrating thing anymore about having a Democrat fix things, for instance, the monumental debt that was racked up by St. Ronnie of Raygun,
yeah,
and his little pissant sidekick, George, got cleaned up, but at terrible, terrible cost to the United States by Bill Clinton.
And I
don't mean to get the Clinton fans mad at me about that, or the Clinton haters mad for me saying something good about Bill, because like any human being, he's a mixed bag. But you know, he did take us toward fiscal sanity. But did so while at the same time doing stuff like that evil welfare so-called reform. We're in a place in America now, Bob, where we are psychically or karmically or historically, whatever, ickily, we're in a place now where, you can argue that it took FDR every minute of every day that he was in office to fix the 12-year train wreck that was the Republican policies of the 1920s and the early 30s. And I think that argument can be sustained quite convincingly. But after that, the Republicans got all pissed off, so you can't have another FDR. You can't have another three-term or four-term president. So Barack Obama has, at the very most, 8 years to fix all of this so that some other no-good, dirty son-of-a-bitch Republican can come in and break it all over again.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, I thought you were.
The line, Bob. We have to continue this. Education, okay, if you want to call it that, of of not only our constituency, but theirs as well. We have to do everything that we can to wake them up and show them where they are being used. Not that they're bad people. They may be just so befuddled. They're just, you know, they're grasping at straws. They're reaching for anything. And if you toss them a brick, they'll grab it and sink with it. But if you reach out a hand and bring them up and say, wait a minute, let's first not go in the deep end if you can't swim, which is absolutely what you would do for a child. And we're dealing with children here, Bob. We're not dealing with adults. They're not thinking for themselves. They're having it spoon-fed them by right-wing media, right-wing talk show hosts. They live it, they breathe it, they get it stuffed down their throats every day, and they just are eating tablets. And that's where we are at. We've got to continue our grassroots movement that brought us here to this point. Because it took a lot of effort. You remember when, because I do, oh my God, I do, when George Bush George W. was sworn in, I thought, my God, this is wrong. They, you know, and the U.S. Supreme Court decided that they would select the president rather than allow the elected president, who was Al Gore at the time, if I remember correctly, who had been elected by a majority of the people of the United States and had the majority of the people in the state of Florida. But due to some hoodwinks and tiddlywinks and, you know, just, we were cheated out. We were, what was the word? The presidency of the United States was a coup d'etat, you know?
Yeah.
And they pulled it off brilliantly. They did. They pulled it off brilliantly.
And see, the reason, you know, I know, Bob, that when I bring up people like Godzilla from Wasilla, or Piyush the Exorcist Jindal, there's a lot of people out there that say, "Oh, Bob, shut up! Oh, neither one of those could ever be president. That's no. Ridiculous. That's just crazy, Bob."
George Bush. Hey,
bingo.
About George Bush.
Bingo. I will never say that any right-wing freakazoid out there can never be president again.
Right. Because they said that about Bush. They said
some babbling drunk on a street corner in some Republican state could very well wind up to be president. And by the way, you know, while we're at it, there's a whole nother generation of Bushes on the way.
I know, but Bob, and I'm not out of this yet. I'll be out of it when they finally throw that last shovel of dirt in my face. I'm not going to just stand by quietly and allow this teabagging stuff. It's another stunt. You go back and look at all the stunts they pulled, and
This is a nationwide version of the Miami Dade County riot from December 2000.
Yeah. The banging on doors. Stop the count. And they were also the same thing. I've heard it said they're AstroTurf. Okay. I know what grassroots are. I deal with them all the time out here on the farm. You know, and I know, you know, without the roots, the grass, and I'm looking out here and it's starting to turn green again, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be cutting grass here and, you know, doing all that I do out here. But without those roots, those underlying pinnages that are asleep in the winter and covered with snow, this green grass that's coming up that will feed the livestock and feed the birds and give sustenance to the earth cannot exist. And that's where they're trying to think about this grassroots. They're saying grassroots. Okay. thing they call the teabagging parties or whatever is just not grassroots. It's something that is contrived to try to usurp what we did, you and I, and every other listener, and every other person, that we wouldn't even say we were liberals. We would say we're progressives. And some of us, like Guy James and myself, screamed out, I ain't no damn progressive. I'm a liberal, by God. I am a yellow dog Democrat, and they'll nail me into the ground. But I'll stand, and I'll stand against all odds because I'm a yellow dog Democrat. And a lot of people don't know what a yellow dog Democrat is. I think it comes from, you know, that old movie, Old Yeller, you know, where this old dog stood against a grizzly bear to save a boy, to save a nation. Us yellow dog Democrats will go to fight the Nazi regime, will fight anything on this planet to save this nation. And I believe that old Abe Lincoln, if he were alive today, would be side by side with me.
Well, actually, you know, we were talking about the Old South a few minutes ago. That yellow dog Democrat line comes from the Old South, Bob. And it was a phrase used in the late 19th century to describe Southern Democrats who would, it was said, vote for an old yeller dog before they would vote for a Republican. And I'm one of those too.
Okay.
I had a buddy once upon a time who said, he said, Bob, I have done many bad things in my life. I have committed many a sin. And he said, but when I die and I stand before the pearly gates, and St. Peter looks at me and says, did you ever vote Republican? I'll be able to say, no, sir, I did not. And he will say, swing wide the gates, come in, you goodly man.
You goodly man. Well, the thing is, it's flipped, okay? The curtain is flipped up. The Republicans of the South are not Republicans of the North. They're not the ones that put old Abe Lincoln in there, but Abe Lincoln, I'm dyed of the wool yellow dog Democrat. I really am. I've never voted. I didn't vote for Reagan. I voted for Dukakis. I didn't give a damn if he looked silly in a tank. He was a Democrat, by God.
My first presidential vote was cast in 1984 for Walter Mondale.
Ah, me too. I voted for Mondale.
And it's Democrats all the way down ever since. Bob, this has been a wonderful conversation, but I got to run along.
All right, you have a great one. And just know this: don't let them break that line, boys. When Pickett brings his charge up there, just stand and stand hard and fight to the last man. And by God, you repel him. You'll push him back.
And you know what? We started out talking about Rick Goodhair Perry. You know, he has good hair. And you mentioned Pickett's charge reminds me. General George Pickett was the good hair of his day. Because he went into battle with his curls oiled.
That's right. He did, didn't he? Yeah, he did. He was a prissy miss too, wasn't he?
Yep, you betcha.
I heard he liked to perfume himself up a lot, kind of wearing fancy uniforms, kind of like a...
Made a French cat house smell like a locker room. Bob, you take it easy, brother.
Yeah, same to you.
Hey, is the river behaving itself up toward you? I know it's nasty downriver from you.
Oh, yeah, but, hey, up here, I'm on a high flat. I really am. I'm probably just a couple of inches... below the highest point in the whole damn state. So, really, we're on high ground here. Even if all the dams broke, we'd still be good.
Good.
So, hey.
We think about you.
And yours, and to all our friends, know this. If we stand together, they can't break us, and we will. Through hope and through love and charity, reclaim this nation, Bob, and we'll give it back to the people. And hopefully, like Ben Franklin said, what kind of a government did you give you? Are you giving us? what did he say? A republic, if you can keep it. And a republic is just that, of and by and for the people. Even in Caesar's time, it was a republic before Caesar. So, good night and good luck.
Thank you, Bob, and give Glenda our regards.
I'll do that.
All right. Take care, brother.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
What are you doing, Luke?
Well, I'm sorry to call in two nights in a row, but I've
been calling
some of this. I tell you what, have you noticed on all this coverage I've been seeing? Now, I'll admit there's some good crowds, but do you notice how almost none of the shots they're showing on TV are from above? That all these shots they're showing are people standing in the middle of a crowd, so you can't tell how big the crowd is. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Sort of like the thing, you know, with Saddam, when they pulled down the statue. You know, when you're standing so close to it, you can't tell how many people was really in that square. And it's just amazing. I sat here and watched two or three different news shows and a little bit of the cable, and I have not seen one real good shot where anybody took it from, like, you know, a couple floors up from the next building over or something.
Nah, no. No book depository shots.
But you know what I mean? It just seems odd. Every one of these pictures you see, it's whoever's doing the talking is standing there with about 20 people crowded around him, so you can't see how many people there are.
Well, and Sue was telling me earlier via a PM from the chat room, she wrote and said, in yet another teabag day controversy, Fox anchor Neil Cavuto was captured on an open mic discussing the crowd numbers with an on-location producer, estimating the turnout at 5,000 people. But minutes later, Cavuto told viewers they were expecting 5,000 here. It's got to be easily double, if not triple that.
Yep, he did. They've been showing that. And it, you know,
that's that right-wing math. That's that miracle math made easy, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. You know, it's like when they had the Million Man March and things. But amazingly enough, when the Republicans are sitting there looking at Democrats having groups, all of a sudden, well, it can't be a third of what the numbers say, even if it is the Park Service. No, they can't be right on what them numbers are. It's got to be much less. Like I say, it's amazing, like you say, it's Republican math. It's amazing how numbers change up and down for them. But, I'm just waiting to see tonight. Like I say, I think Stewart's live tonight, so this ought to be a good one to see how he covers this. But I've been watching a little bit of Mr. Olbermann here while I was waiting, and, you know, they've been doing good coverage of it. CNN's kind of iffy on it. You know, I'm still waiting to see somebody at one of these things look at one of these people at this thing and say, well, good, where were you last year? You know, you see these people holding up with their signs saying, my kid, you know, is 5 years old and he already owes so much in them. I just want to see the CNN or even MSNBC person stick the microphone in their face and go, well, gee, where were you last year when it was this bad?
Yeah, I kind of hate to break it to you, but you got $4,000 debt hung on your baby the day it was born in 2004.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing to see, you know, how that, oh, now it's a big problem. Well, last year when we had, you know, what was it? They were talking about, oh, it's a bad, you know, what, you got a deficit of $3 trillion this year. And I'm going, well, last year it was a deficit of $3 trillion. I mean, if you count the Iraq War like everybody else does, except for the government last year. You know, and it's amazing how, you know, like I say, when it's $3 trillion last year, I didn't see you all standing up screaming and hollering. Where were you then? You know, it's like I said, you know, unless you're making over, was it $250,000, you get a tax cut this year. So where's all this coming from? I mean, you know, so I'd be standing there asking, do you make over $250,000? Well, then you've got a tax cut. Why are you out here complaining about taxes? I mean, it's that moment of you're just having that, you know, the shaking your head and moment, you know, it's kind of like, this doesn't make any sense, not even on the basic simple.
Yeah,
simple
I think this is three nights in a row that I've referenced Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride. Yeah. That word, those words, taxed enough. I don't think they mean what you think they mean.
Oh, I'll tell you what, you know, it's some of this stuff, you know, where you're seeing stuff like you were talking a minute ago about, was it Governor Goodhair? Apparently he's making this speech, and the people in the audience are screaming, secede, secede.
Yeah, you could hear them.
All the billions you got from the government this year, then?
Yeah, goodbye Texas roads.
You know, it's amazing how these people are the same people who used to cry about welfare queens, but these are the same people who apparently want a whole lot of something for nothing. Oh, yeah, we want you to do this and do that, but, oh, we don't need to pay for it. No, 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 no. These are the credit card people. These are the people who say, charge it. It's like, no, it's time to pay those bills. Congratulations. All those bills that George Bush ran up for those last 8 years, the bill has arrived. Congratulations.
Yeah, just kind of think of this as a great big January after Christmas.
Mm-hmm. You know, all that money that he's been spending, that they were spending for the last 8 years, it's time to pay the bill. I'm sorry, but, you know, when they kept saying, oh, we're pushing up the deficit, you know, amazing enough, when a Republican's in the White House, deficits don't matter. Isn't that amazing? And the minute the Democrats in the White House, that deficit's the most important thing in some of these people's lives.
Yeah, but they don't, they don't really matter.
I know. Oh, I sent you that video again. Did it work this
time? Yeah, it worked this time. That was precious.
I wish we were on TV. On
Bruce Pearl, head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers basketball program, with an orange plaid sport coat on.
Lindsey Nelson was smiling up in heaven.
You know it. That or going blind. I mean, that may have been a little loud for Lindsey. A volunteer orange necktie and bling and rapping about how cool it is to be a Vol.
Well, what they had was about 2-3 days ago, they had this thing. It's sort of their version of the ESPY Awards, where they hand out awards to different student athletes for the year. And that was part of the entertainment. Just to set that up so you understand why he was doing that.
Okay.
They were having sort of like their intramural awards, you know, for everybody in the different sports. So he was there, and he was part of the entertainment. And we'll see you this weekend. We get our football orange and white game. Oh, joy.
Well, you know, but there's a lot to be fascinated with in Lane Kiffin right now.
Oh, trust me, there is. Oh, like I say, it's either going to be a great success or a wonderful train wreck. We haven't.
I mean, he's got smoke coming out Urban Meyer's butt right now.
That is one of the fun parts of it.
And I, David down there in Tennessee sent me an article where he said, oh, yeah, this is all planned.
Oh, yeah. You just got to wonder if he's just doing this trying to take attention off something else. You know what I mean? That he's doing this sort of, you know, look over here at me. You know, don't look at something else. So, you know, we're just waiting to see what happens when the real season starts in this fall.
I mean, he's got Al Davis to the point that he dribbles his cream corn down his shirt at the mere mention of Lane Kiffin's name.
Well, you know,
Urban Meyer fit to be tied. God only knows what the $4 million man in Tuscaloosa does at the mere mention of his name.
Yeah, you know, like I say, there's some coaches now in the SEC that are just precious. I mean, every time you turn around, if you look at anything on Georgia, they'll tell you that Mark Richt can walk on water. You know.
Well, he is Jesus' best friend. Just ask him; he'll tell you.
I know. It's, you know, it's one of those things. I'm sure he probably knows Mr. Jindal too. You know, it's some of these. You know, but back to what we were talking about. I'm sorry, got off the.
No, that's okay. This happens real easy for me. Don't worry about it. It ain't your fault, Luke.
Every once in a while, we got to do something to relax ourselves a little bit and just sort of sit back and laugh at the world.
Well, hell, you know, it's only, let's see, 8 minus 4. Yeah, it's only 3.5 months till two-a-day start.
I know. But, hey, but on this whole thing here of these protests, now, could you imagine in 2000 if, what it'd be now, is it now 80 days, I think it is, essentially, after the inauguration, if the Democrats had nationwide get-togethers claiming, you know, telling everybody how that, you know, that this was an illegal government. You know, if we'd been out there crying at it, and some of us have been saying, using words like secede, can you imagine the screaming that would have went on the hate radio?
Well, look, you know,
American people.
Cindy Sheehan sat down in a ditch And Flush Flimball just about had his eyes fall out of his blow out of his sockets.
Oh.
About went deaf all over again.
Well, you know what I mean? If you turn this, like, you know, it's what we used to call the left foot argument, the one that Mr. Dershowitz used to make. If you turned it around 180 degrees and looked at it and looked at it from the other way, if we'd have done this, you'd have had people wanting us to be arrested.
Well, I know it's kind of
we'd be arrested.
It's kind of like what Albert said last night. Even the Moran guy didn't show up for these things.
I tell you what, you know, it's one of those things. I watch it over the next couple of days. I bet 10-1 the numbers are going to go up. Oh no, it wasn't 1,000. It's 2,000. Oh, it wasn't 2,000. It's 4,000. I'm sure by the end of the week it was a million.
I got four. Do I have six? I got six. Do I have eight? I got eight. Got eight. Somebody give me 10.
Well,
somebody imagine 10,000 teabaggers.
Well, I say the night I believe that both Mr. Stewart and Mr. Colbert, I believe, are live tonight. So it will be interesting to see what they do on this, because I'm sure they'll have one of their crack reporters.
That should be right fun.
But
I may actually have to hook up the cable in the bedroom and watch.
Either that, or I'm sure if you don't have cable, whoever's listening to us, if they ain't got cable, I'm sure that tomorrow I'm sure there'll be a nice coverage of it in Crooks and Liars.
Yeah, the stuff's already beginning to flow in at Think Progress, so. I got a feeling that Rachel Maddow is going to have plenty to work with. There'll be plenty to go around for Stewart and Colbert as well. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on, brother. But
I got more people, bud. Have a good evening.
Thanks for your patience.
All righty.
Later. Bye now. Yeah, pardon us. We are prone to very easily slipping off into football talk. We can't help it, folks like Luke and David and Tennessee and David in South Carolina. No matter how bad things get, did you see that corner they got? He runs a 4.140. Honest to God, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah. He's a corner because he can't catch the football, but he can chase the football real good. Sorry, it just happens. More stuff on tap, but I'm not going extra innings. It's way too hard on Ben. So we'll pick up where we left off tomorrow night. You know, heck, this has been a serialized conversation radio program from its inception. Nobody should be surprised. Listen, just got to tell you, it is the 15th day of April. April is half gone. You know, it takes us, we have to round up about $2,000 a month to keep going. And what we don't round up comes out of our hides. We are halfway through April. The goal is $2,000, and I just checked just so I could give you a number, because Miss Kate reminded me I got to give people numbers so they'll know. We are at less than $500 on the month for April. Grim sucks. So I mean, just to let you know, and I'm not trying to put pressure on anybody. But if you value this, if this matters, and you can, whatever you can, please help keep us going. And we do appreciate it. Always appreciate the help of Peter Godbold, our IT professional, of John Fox, our chief engineer, our web designer, webmaster, chief musician, amazing guy all the way around. Host of All Foxed Up, Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We always appreciate the efforts of Ben Birch, the most overworked man in liberal talk at whiterosesociety.org. He, too, has his own financial shortfalls with which he is dealing. Between y'all and Coal River Mountain Watch, that's why there is still a horn. And we appreciate them more than can be expressed. CRMW.net and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I hope you had a pleasant Passover or Easter. I'm in my last day of Passover. Come sundown, I can eat bread again. I'll be very happy. And I'm whistling a happy tune. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we will fight our country's battles on the land as on the sea. All right, I won't subject you to my singing any longer. I realize there's only a limit you can take. But yeah, I'm pumped up about what happened off the coast of Somalia. Now, I know what you're saying. You know, I mean, military jingoism on the horn, it sounds extraordinary. But I have to admit, I am excited and proud of everyone involved, from the people on the ship to the fearless captain to, yes, I'm praising three sharpshooters, three incredible Navy SEALs who in three shots took out three pirates. I'm praising the Obama administration for standing firm, for giving out the orders to take action if the captain's life was in danger. I'm excited. And I think it's important to praise the military when they do good. God knows we liberals attack the military when it does bad, and we should. It's important to praise them when they do something good. What's shocking to me about the whole pirate crisis, frankly, is the state of events as it existed before the United States got involved. It appears to be a regular thing down there with Western powers, England and France and Norway and Denmark and, you know, all the West, paying ransom to these people when they hijack ships. Now, the French did try their own landing. Unfortunately, they weren't as successful as we were. I don't say that to brag. I say that I'm genuinely sorry. The pirates hijacked a small sailing ship with apparently two couples and a young child, and the French saved three of the four adults and the child, but one died. But to me, what's fascinating about all of this is what it says about your values, what it says about your gut values. On which side do you stand? You know, do you believe in law and order? If the laws make sense, now I'm all about fighting unjust laws. I do it all the time. But if the laws make sense, do you stand by them? Or do you say, you know, it's cheaper and easier just to pay ransom? And, of course, I went back to my history books to look up the wars that America almost doesn't know we fought. The song I sang, of course, is the Marine Hymn. The hymn for the United States Marines. And it begins from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. How many Americans know what that means? Well, some Americans might realize that the halls of Montezuma is the halls of the Mexican leader, Montezuma, whom we defeated in the United States-Mexican War, in a war that's far less easy to defend than the shores of Tripoli. On the other hand, you know, you've got California and Texas and Arizona and New Mexico and parts of Colorado and Utah and Nevada out of it. So it was a successful war. I guess in hindsight, I'm glad we fought it, though I'm not sure how justified it was. But Montezuma was not exactly the kindest leader either. Montezuma, of course, has gotten his revenge on us in something that Americans are aware of. Montezuma's revenge, of course.